Hello and welcome to episode 68 of Speak Beastie for August 12th, 2018. I'm Shannon.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Megan.
And now for the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs knees and how.
I like never get to do that.
I thought you did a great job.
Oh, thank you. So guys, guess what?
What?
The bird is an augury.
Oh my god,
I knew confirmed.
It! Yep.
I'm so happy for you.
I can quit now. Finally, everything I've worked towards
it's
has come
an
true.
Your moment has arrived.
Yep. I mean, I just don't know where to go from here, you know? Like, there's nothing else for me to say.
So, go ahead.
The Fantastic Beasts Twitter tweeted, the beasts are back with a little video of a bunch of the beasts that are in the trailer and what they are called. So we got the Augury. We also have, like, the Niffler and the Bowtruckle and Thestrals and the Kelpie. The other, like, new thing is Z-O-U-W-U.
Zawu, so, I think.
Zawu, yeah. I tried to pronounce it on the last episode, and I don't think I did very well, so I'm not going to try again. But we'll find out in November, I guess.
It's the really freaky-looking thing in the trailer. The, like, big thing.
The rest of them, we basically already knew what they were.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yay, an augury.
Yes. So the augury is the derpy bird.
Derpy bird.
I love it.
I love him.
Derp.
And then the only other real, like, news we have is that there's going to be baby Nifflers.
They're so
Which,
cute.
Like, I can't.
Can we talk about this image they released, though?
It looks like a hamster with, like, a snout, but it's so cute.
It looks so fake.
I know.
Yeah. I feel like that's like almost like concept art. Like, it doesn't really look like it's going to be, like, in the movie.
I mean,
that way.
Maybe it
I
is.
I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not.
I don't.
It just
don't
looks
know.
Like it's been copy pasted into this image.
It really does, yeah.
Like, is it flying, I guess? I don't know.
He's not really even looking at it.
No, he's just kind of like, okay.
It's maybe like art for. Like, merch, maybe? That they just kind of slapped on a picture and were like, look! Like, I don't think this is how it appears in the film.
I'm kind of confused, too, because Nifflers are described as being all black. Like, how did we get these weird other, like, color variations? Like, what happened here?
I guess that's just them as babies.
I don't know.
Well, sometimes. Like, when bald eagles are babies, they're, like, really cute and fluffy white things.
Yeah.
And then they grow into, like, terrifying, like, caw-caw things. So, sometimes babies look different. I don't know.
I don't know either.
Sometimes babies look different.
Yeah.
Very confusing.
I'm not upset about it.
I reserve my judgment.
I'm just excited for Fantastic Beasts 2.5, Baby Nifflers Take Manhattan.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Baby Niffler TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. Netflix series.
Yeah, like a little kid's show. So down for that. And it's just the Nifflers running around stealing stuff, teaching other good lessons to kids.
Sign me up.
Don't steal stuff, but if you do,
make sure you're a baby Niffler.
Make sure it's shiny.
Make sure you look really cute. Yes.
Go big or go home, kids.
The more it's worth, the more points you get.
If you're going to steal, make sure it's something expensive.
Yep. Avoid dogs.
What?
I said avoid dogs.
Oh, avoid, like, steal. Oh, I got it.
Yeah, because the dog will eat you.
Yeah,
now
that's
I'm just
good
imagining
for a, baby
a video game. Like a little simple video game, like a phone game where you're a Niffler.
Collecting coins.
And you're just trying to run around getting coins. And like there's a little pixel Newt following you and it's
like
a
Temple
Newt.
Run.
Yeah. And it just goes like every time you run over a coin, it's like ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
We should
if
make
there
it.
Are any like mobile video game developers listening to this episode, please help us. We'll pay
not
you.
Even like make this game, just help us.
Help us.
Make exactly. our dreams a reality, no, just like the augury.
In general, whatever you can do to improve my life, but I would recommend the making of this game.
So, in honor of this news, I think the owls have taken the day off, and the augury is bringing in our post right now.
Oh, man.
Woohoo.
Here oh, it comes. Man.
It's just some depressing post. It's going to be all wet. They're crying on it.
Oh.
So.
Because that's what they do.
The augury?
Yeah.
But they look so cute and derpy. How can they be sad?
Because it's raining usually.
Well, maybe they love the rain. I don't know.
That's why they cry.
Hang on.
This is facts.
I thought it was just a derpy bird.
I know my Fantastic Beasts.
I'm not trying to question you. I'm just trying to learn more.
The augury cries because it's raining and people used to think it cries.
Oh my god, being shy creatures, they stay primarily within their tear-shaped nest and only fly in periods of heavy rain.
You know, in Mean Girls, when she's like, there's a whatever percent chance it's raining right now. That's basically the augury. But as a bird.
Aww.
But sometimes
rain has been
is
used
good.
As a home weather forecaster, though its persistent moaning during the winter months can be unbearable for some. Hashtag me.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
Yeah, that's adorable and sad. I'm sorry. I know we've talked about this before, but I truly can't memorize every beast in the
oh
world. Because I'm not.
How dare you?
I'm not Newt frickin' Scamander. So. All right.
Anyway.
So we've got a sad bird.
I promise the male is not depressing. So we have quite a few responses to the episode 66 podcast question.
I didn't find any answers on the site to last episode's podcast question, and our lovely producer Ashley has informed us that Nargles have invaded our email and we can't get in there right now. So if you sent us an email, we're not ignoring you. We love your response, whatever it is, but we can't read it just yet. But we do have some responses to the episode 66 podcast question, which was two episodes ago.
So that question was, do you think that Voldemort and Grindelwald would have been friends if they encountered each other at the height of their power? So we have a response from Mari, who says, I think Grindelwald would see that Voldemort was useful and lure him into thinking they were partners, but Voldemort would just become another minion to Grindelwald. I could see this happening. I feel like ultimately, Grindelwald is worse than Voldemort.
Really?
Yeah, I've always kind of seen that. Like, he seems more Whereas Voldemort was, like, very clearly, like, crazy and evil. Like, I feel like Grindelwald kind of is able to lure people in, like Mari's saying.
Yeah, Grindelwald is more, like, underhanded manipulative.
Yeah.
Whereas Voldemort just walks up to you and is like, so, I'm evil. How into that are you?
Yeah.
And some people are like, oh, very. Sign me up.
Right. And then we have another response to that question from Rosmerta's Turquoise Shoes, which actually, this is from our website, and she says, I don't know if it's a she or a he, sorry. They say, this adding disgust to the website is a brilliant idea, which we agree because we got lots of awesome comments on there. So thanks, guys.
Yeah.
So this is one of those from the website. And the response is, if Dumbledore and Grindelwald had met during the height of their power, say during their late 20s and not as teenagers, I think they would still have had a spark of interest and respect, acknowledging a like-minded contemporary, but would Dumbledore still have been the same person if he hadn't gone through his teenage trauma?
So we're responding to, if Voldemort and Grindelwald had met at the height of their power, and if Dumbledore and Grindelwald had met during the height of their power? Which I think are both actually pretty interesting questions.
Yeah.
So yeah. Definitely still would have had a spark of interest and respect, but Dumbledore, I don't know, would Dumbledore have been the same person if he hadn't gone through all of that? Like, would he have been, would he have come out on the other side as the Dumbledore we know and love, or would he still be kind of stuck in that muggles are scum mentality?
I feel like, honestly, Ariana's death ultimately triggered some sort of change in Dumbledore. I feel like he realized after losing something that important to him that there's more to life than living forever and ultimate power. I think, yeah, I don't know that. I think he would be a very different person if he didn't go through that.
Yeah.
Would Ariana still have died if they hadn't been dueling?
No, she'd probably still be alive. Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
But if she was an Obscurus,
by that point,
would
it
ultimately have killed her anyway?
Yeah, she might have died eventually, but then it wouldn't be like, it'd be a different kind of trauma for him.
Right.
Yeah.
He wouldn't feel the
guilt. So many what ifs.
Me or my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The what ifs. They'll drive you crazy.
So many. And then, let's see, we have Clemson Ravenclaw actually commented, they had a response to the podcast question, but I wanted to read this as well, because I think this is interesting. They say, one thing I'm curious about, it should be in one of the beginning scenes of our next section that we'll be discussing, and I believe it was touched on in this episode, meaning episode 66, but when Graves said he was there, I think this is referencing the attacks and violence in Europe that we see Serafina and other Aurors are looking at newspapers and reading about Grindelwald's rise to power.
Yeah, and she's like, he's rising to power in Europe. And he's like, I know, yeah. I was there.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell, because he's like, she's talking about the attack that he was at that morning, the Obscurus thing.
Yeah.
But she's also talking about people think it's connected to Grindelwald. And then he's like, I was there.
Yeah.
And then he's like, this wasn't a person, this was a beast.
Yeah.
So it's like, wait, you mean you were there, like, the scene we just saw?
Or the other one,
where Grindelwald was? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Because Clemson Ravenclaw says, yeah, of course he was there. He is Grindelwald.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, yeah, because I always kind of thought, like, what Shannon just said, that he was referring to the New York City beast attack. So that's interesting.
I guess I never really thought about that line as much. But that's interesting, because Clemson Ravenclaw says, I always thought that was in reference to the attacks in Europe and took it as foreshadowing. Yeah. But me being me, at the end when he turned into Grindelwald, I was like, gasp! What? I did not see this coming!
You still do that every time?
Every time. But yeah, no, I think it's fun to go back and watch it knowing that that is a thing and try to pick up on these types of clues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I enjoy that.
Clemson Ravenclaw also has a shout out for Michael. They say, Michael, I know virtually nothing about movies and how they are shot, so I so appreciate you nerding out and educating me. Seriously, this episode was thebomb.com. So, yay, Michael. Thanks for making us look super smart. And then there's the answer to the podcast question. So, Clemson Ravenclaw, you had a lot to say. Thanks so much. This is all quality stuff. They say, if the meeting of Grindelwald and Dumbledore is deferred 5 to 10 years, I think one big change would be that Dumbledore would have eventually gotten really entrenched in taking care of Ariana. Aberforth says that Albus did relatively well before Grindelwald got to Godric's Hollow, so I think once Aberforth had gotten home from school, he would have helped Albus and the two brothers would have gotten much closer. I think that Albus would have held down the fort until Aberforth graduated from Hogwarts and then would have turned the reins over to Aberforth to be Ariana's permanent caregiver. Now at this point, one of two things happens. One, Dumbledore matures greatly and realizes that the people in his life, like Bathilda, Aberforth, and Ariana, are much more important than searching for elusive objects that seem to attract nothing but trouble. Or, two, Albus becomes extremely resentful of having to care for Ariana, and once he is freed from that burden by Aberforth, he throws himself into the quest for the Hollows and completely distances himself from his family because he saw them as a stumbling block. The question really is, with the extended time to care for Ariana without the influence of Grindelwald, does Albus grow to realize what is really important, or does he continue to harbor resentment? So Clemson Ravenclaw is basically saying, even if Grindelwald never came to Godric's Hollow, would Albus have grown so resentful that he would have turned towards that quest for the Hollows anyway?
I kind of feel like, I mean, this is all speculation, obviously. I kind of feel like the second one is a bit more likely. He becomes resentful, starts looking for the Hollows, and then, like, kind of devolves into, like, a not-so-great dude. Mm-hmm. Like, it's...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't see what the catalyst would be for him to change his ways if he doesn't have that, like, major life event to deal with.
I agree. I think that Dumbledore is a very ambitious person, obviously. And I think that a lot of people who are ambitious almost to a fault, and maybe their ambitions get in the way of themselves or people around them, I think they don't realize the error of that, and maybe that there are other things that are more valuable until something really detrimental happens.
Yeah.
Which is the Hufflepuff in me speaking.
Yeah.
So. Friends and family are so important, guys.
Yay.
Some good comments.
Yeah.
Yeah,
thank
really.
You guys. And thank you to the sad bird for delivering our mail.
Yeah. I'll just keep a hold of it.
And, okay, that works. And once we figure out the deal with the email, we will totally read all of your comments.
Yes.
Unless there's like 7,000.
Then no,
sorry. We can't read all of them.
But we appreciate you.
Yes, we do.
even if we don't have 7,000 and we have zero.
Yes.
We still appreciate you.
This is accurate.
So this week we are discussing the next 15-minute segment of the first film, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
The what? The who? Know.
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Where what?
To find them.
Oh, oh. Okay.
It's a film.
Got it.
It's
okay.
A film about beasts.
I see.
Thank you okay. very much.
Oh, that film. Okay.
So we're watching from minute 15 to minute 30. So it starts in the middle of the aerial shot when they first walk inside Makusa, and then it ends right after Tina has brought Jacob and Newt into
the you Goldstein brought men apartment. Home.
Yep.
Into the Goldstein lair.
Ooh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we start inside Makusa. It's really our first look at Makusa. Newt is looking around like, aw, this place is awesome.
Me too.
And yeah.
I love magic.
I just didn't notice until this watch that I'm like, wow, he's really like awestruck by this. I mean, it's way cooler than the ministry where he definitely... works so the shot goes so it's like the shot like lifts up and moves through the building and then it like turns towards the ceiling and there are like clouds at the top.
It's like a skylight only cooler.
Yeah, it was like interesting.
Like the enchanted
there are clouds
ceiling
inside the building or it's like Hogwarts, yeah. That's all.
I dig it. I think the music when he's walking in reminds me a little bit of, like, the themes that you get when Harry's walking through Diagon Alley. Just kind of, like, exciting and upbeat.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, it reminded me a little bit of the Weasley's Wizard Wheezes theme that they always play in Diagon Alley mm-hmm. at Universal.
Oh, yeah.
And also, I got a little bit of the Johnny Depp Willy Wonka remake, because I used to listen to that soundtrack a lot. But it wasn't composed by the same dude.
That's funny, though.
So that's just a fun tidbit for you.
Cool.
Well, the Diagon Alley parallel makes sense, because Diagon Alley in the first movie is our first, like, entrance into a truly wizarding world space. And this is the same for this movie.
Right.
Tis true.
And, like, the parallel between... Newt's amazement and Harry's is kind of cool too. This also seemed really reminiscent of the Ministry of Magic to me in the Order of the Phoenix when they first walk into the atrium and stuff. There's that giant banner of fudge hanging in the atrium and mm-hmm. in this film we have the same thing with Serafina. There's a giant thing on the wall, banner of her face.
And it's kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, get it. You're in charge.
Yeah. We get the hint.
And it kind of tells you something about Serafina right away. Like, Serafina's obviously not as bad as Fudge. Like, Fudge was just stupid. But it tells you right away, like, oh, she's not even really bad. But it just kind of tells you, like, oh, she cares about her, like, image.
Is kind of like Fudge, though, where she's not bad, per se, but she's not good.
Yeah.
She's just kind of like, she's like a why are you block. Making these decisions?
Yeah. She's definitely smarter than Fudge. I think Fudge was probably just elected because he was there. I think Serafina probably actually did some cool stuff, and they were like, yeah, she should be president. So they're making their way through. Tina's telling everybody, I got a Section 3A. She's really serious about it. And it's just
Goblin
like,
operating the elevator?
Yeah. Red. Something I noticed this time is there's just a lot of beasts. There's a lot of, like, there's a close-up at one point of, like, a kind of... eagle or phoenix gargoyle thing. There's a lot of like things flying around, a lot of fake beasts. And then later in a couple scenes, we'll get to Tina's office, but there's a little extended sequence with these like mice or rats made out of paper, and they get into a little fight. There's just a lot of like little details of beasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is really interesting considering they're so anti-beast.
Yeah.
That their Congress is full of this imagery.
Oh, the irony.
Yep.
And at this point in the movie, we haven't really seen much of the beasts themselves.
No.
We saw somebody peeking out of the case on the boat.
And then we've just seen the Niffler.
Oh, Niffler.
So they make their way through the atrium, and then we cut to a newspaper.
Woohoo!
Newspaper so headlines.
I paused the movie and I wrote down everything. So the big headline that Graves and Seraphina and the Aurors are looking at is magical disturbances risk wizarding exposure.
Gas
exposure. Exposure. And there's a picture from the Obscurus attack that Graves was just at.
Oh.
It says, Makusa on maximum alert. International Confederation of Wizards called for emergency meeting, which is a little bit of foreshadowing, because we're going to accidentally walk in on that meeting later. off to the side, it says, President Seraphina Pickery to address fearful American wizarding community. What's weird is Pickery is spelled P-I-C-K-E-R-Y.
Huh.
But we only ever, like, it's always officially spelled P-I-C-Q-U-E-R-Y. So I was like, what is the truth?
Here's a trade secret, guys. Journalists don't know how to spell.
You'd think you'd know how to spell the president's name, but
you have copy editors, though, don't you?
No, but this is why you ask when you interview someone for them to say and spell their name for you, so you don't get it wrong.
So I wonder if that was like a Mina Lima little fun nod to journalism and
maybe poking fun.
Human error, or was it like actual human error?
They just didn't tell Mina Lima how her name is spelled.
Yeah, they were like, okay, I guess we'll make it up.
Maybe the New York Ghost printing press doesn't have a Q. So ooh, they're like, oh, well, we gotta change the spelling.
That's maybe probably it.
I mean, how often do you use Qs anyway?
That's a useless letter.
So then, right under that she's gonna address the wizarding community, it says thousands of letters will be dispatched across America from tomorrow, which is a weird grammar sentence.
She's not gonna do it says, on radio. She's gonna send thousands of letters.
Yeah, then there are owls on standby. So are they like, are they copying the letters? I guess there's probably magic for that. She doesn't have to handwrite every letter.
Does she have to hand sign all of them?
You'd think she probably has a stamp.
Yeah,
you know, that's like a fancy SP. That's why nobody knows how to spell her name. They just, that's her like signature. It's just SP, and they're like, what? I don't know. We'll guess from there. So then another little sidebar says Gellert Grindelwald International Wizard Hunt intensifies. Suspicious wizards questioned by Makusa officials.
Huh.
I don't know. Some fun stuff over on the edge. There's the culture column, and it says Wiz Jazz takes New York by storm.
Wiz Jazz.
And then my personal favorite of these headlines, revered tome, Bigfoot Last Stand, gets Wizard Broadway adaptation.
Oh my god.
There's yes, so much going on in this sentence.
For how much
Wizard
love
Broadway is a thing.
Yeah.
Bigfoot Last Stand is a thing and is a revered tome, and it's getting a Broadway adaptation.
I can't believe we didn't know about Wizard Broadway.
Oh my god.
I know. I saw this and I was like, this changes everything.
Go back to episode 1. We have to redo this whole thing.
And it's just called Wizard Broadway.
That's amazing. Wizard Broadway, like, I picture, like, the theaters have to be, like, hidden and, like, secret. So, like, I picture, like, if anyone's went to see Puffs when it was first, like, showing in New York, it was, like, super awkward and secret. Like, you had to go, like, up, like, three flights of stairs. And it was, like, this weird, like, back alley door that, like, wasn't really marked. And it was like, am I gonna die? That's what I picture Wizard Broadway like. So, like, so fitting.
It's probably like Diagon Alley. Like, you're walking down Broadway and there's some door that you go through and then you end up on Wizard Broadway.
Yeah.
And that's where it's all like the wizard theaters are.
It's like you go down through, like, a manhole cover and then it's, like, underground.
Ooh, what do you think Wizard Times Square looks like? Ooh. Jeez.
There's just a whole literal underground.
Just Times Square stacked on top of Times Square.
It's the Underdark.
Yeah.
Okay, but Bigfoot Last Stand.
Gotta see
What is it? Why is it revered?
Why is it
historical? Is this like Wizard Hamilton?
Probably.
But it's Bigfoot.
Yes.
My
that
name
is what
is
it is.
Bigfoot. That's all I got.
There's a million things I haven't stood on. I was trying to think of a foot joke.
Yeah. There's a million combs I haven't
not
used.
Gonna waste my stomp.
Oh god.
That's really good. And it's a revered tome. See, that's what makes it sound historical to me.
Yeah. It's like Custer's Last Stand, only Bigfoot.
Does that mean Bigfoot died?
Oh, God.
Wait. Don't wanna... Wasn't Custer's Last Stand at, like, Little Bighorn or something?
Yeah.
Bighorn, Bigfoot. I'm, like, seeing a connection.
Are we suggesting Bigfoot fought in the Revolutionary War?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that was a Civil War.
Of course he did.
Okay.
Civil War.
Oh, sorry.
Fought in both.
Sorry. I just visited two Civil War battlefields, so I should know these things.
Come on. Get with it.
Sorry. I really only care about Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, to be honest with you. He's my favorite Civil War general.
I'm going to laugh so hard if it's not Civil War either. We're going to sound so smart.
General Custer. This is not a history podcast. We never claimed that it was. Yeah, definitely Civil War.
Well, sometimes it is. So something that I know even less about is sports, and that's the next section of the newspaper. Wizards intrigued yet fascinated by nomad, quote, baseball.
I love this because this is so, like, it's a New York paper, and of course they're talking about baseball. Like,
yeah.
I'm a Pittsburgh Pirates fan, so I put baseball in quotes frequently, too.
I'm also intrigued yet fascinated by baseball. What is it?
Sports jokes, guys. We did it.
So then the next couple interesting headlines that don't have to do with sports, they're like right at the bottom. There's a big one that says, "What is this perplexing, sinister aura?" And then the beginning of the article has, "Korean master orologists drafted in for conjecture." I don't know what that means.
Orologist.
Yeah.
Harry Potter wiki. A witch or wizard who specialized in the study of auras. Thank you.
Thanks. So, I don't know if this sinister aura is referring to the Obscurus or something
Could
else.
Could also be a urologist who is a physician who has specialized knowledge and skill regarding problems of the male and female urinary tract.
I don't think that's it.
It could be. You never know.
I'm pretty sure it's the auras.
But if it's a urologist, that makes this even more interesting.
Yes, that's true. And they're Korean masters.
Which is the only urologist you really ever want to see.
Yeah. And then the other small headline is, "Hundreds of forged wand permits intercepted." So,
Oh dear.
Oh dear, dear, dear.
Yeah.
Wait.
Tina better start doing her job, because there's all these forest lawn permits floating around.
Doesn't that suggest that she stinks at this job, too? Tina? Oh, no.
So then Serafina and Graves are talking, and also the other Aurors are there, but they're not talking, because they're not important. Yeah. Graves refers to the Obscurus. He says, "This is a beast. No human could do what this thing is capable of."
How do you know?
He knows it's an Obscurus.
He knows because he was there.
This is something that Joe does that when I reread things, I'm like, but how did nobody figure this out? Like, when Harry's name came out of the Goblet of Fire, Moody was like, well, obviously somebody confounded it and then entered him under a fourth school. And nobody turned around and was like, but how did you... How do you know all that? Maybe you did it. They're all just yeah, you're right. Sounds legit.
To be fair, Graves was the only one of them there investigating. So they'd be like, oh yeah, well, Graves saw it, so.
I guess that's true.
Seems how convenient.
I do think it's indicative that, like, he says, like, no human could do this, even though he knows, like, it comes from a human. He very much does not think of the Obscurus. Or the Obscurial as a person.
No.
Because he sucks. Well,
it's a parasite that attaches itself to, or that, like, generates from a person.
Yes.
True.
But, like, is he saying that the parasite isn't a human, or is he saying that the whole package isn't a human? Do we think?
Well, he's not saying that it's an Obscurus, so he's being as vague as he possibly can.
True.
Is an Obscurus a beast? Like, okay, yes, the movie Fantastic Beasts focuses a lot on it, but man, we always come back to this question of what is a beast.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, Newt's studying it, so is it?
Yes.
But Newt would try and destroy an Obscurus, I would think, or get it away from the host, at least. So I think he even acknowledges that they're dangerous.
There's not really a way to destroy it.
Yeah.
Because he has one and he hasn't destroyed it.
Right.
Or he doesn't think that it should be destroyed.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, then they get talking about, you know, what this could mean, like exposure for wizards, like, obviously muggles are going to start noticing this stuff. Then we get to the line from Serafina. When nomads are afraid, they attack. This can mean exposure. It can mean war. I've just always really liked that line. Yeah. I think it's kind of a really accurate critique of the human reaction to the fear of the unknown, which, I mean, that's really what starts most wars is lack of understanding and a fear of something different. So I think that's also a really cool Joe thing, where she kind of ties into reality a bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was, at least part of that line was in one of the trailers. There's a lot of the scenes that we're talking about today have trailer scenes in them. There were scenes in the trailer.
Definitely.
Because they're like that beginning part of the movie where they're setting stuff up, but it's not really spoilers yet.
But you're still kind of like, what's going on?
Yeah. So something I noticed in this whole, like, 15-minute section is there's a lot of high angles, which, for people who don't know cinematography, that's when the camera is physically up high and is pointed down at the subject, and then low angles is the opposite. The camera is low and pointed up at the subject. And a lot of times it's used to indicate, like, power positions. So now there's a high angle on Tina and Newt because they are in the lower power position. What's kind of interesting is that the angle on Graves and Serafina is not a low angle. It's just straight on.
Mm-hmm.
Usually high angles and low angles kind of go together because it's almost like from the other character's point of view, like looking down and looking up. But no, it's that high angle and that straight on angle. But it emphasizes Tina and Newt being in a low position. And the beginning of this whole section, I mean, is a high angle coming up from Tina and Newt walking into Makusa, and it makes them seem very small and Makusa seem very big.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty awesome.
So that's my cinematography corner. I think I wrote down a couple more of those as we go on.
Yeah, but I like it.
One thing I noticed looking at this scene, I was like, how did I never notice all of these filing cabinets? Like, what the heck? They have a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
I guess.
Computers didn't exist, I guess.
I guess not. I mean, no electronic filing.
That's crazy. Well, not that they'd use it anyway. They're
yeah,
wizards.
They have magic, so it was probably less hard for them.
Yeah.
But it reminds me of, like, an old school library where, like, everything's on an index card.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's probably something like that. Just kind of files for every case.
Yeah. The case files.
So then, Tina's being like, I have a Section 3A, and Serafina's like, get out. She literally says, get out. And Tina's all sad and leaves, and then we get this close-up of Graves looking kind of like, oh, well, maybe I should go see what's up. Huh. So they're trying to kind of make you not necessarily, like, root for Graves, but kind of be like, oh, well, Graves isn't that bad.
Yeah.
But he is that bad.
And
he
on the other worst. Hand, this is where, like, I really started disliking Serafina.
I know.
Like, so what the heck? What's wrong with her? Like, why can't she just listen to what Tina has to say?
Well, yeah, and we've mentioned this before, but later she's like, why didn't you tell me about this? And it's like,
I mean, yeah, that's annoying. But I don't know, I kind of liken it to, like, if you're at work in an important meeting and then somebody walks in and is like, oh, there's someone on the phone for you. It's like, I don't care about that right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can see where the frustration comes in. I love Tina, but it's like, just the timing wasn't great.
Yeah.
But the thing about Tina in this scene that I think is interesting is that she puts up zero fight. Like, she seems all determined to get Newt into Makusa, and then they're like, leave, and she's like, okay, bye.
Yeah.
So that character development starts from here. And I know that we complain a lot that we don't get to see enough of her character arc in the movie, but when you look at this scene, it does seem like she comes a long way by the end.
It's true. I'm proud of her.
Yeah.
So then we get down to the wand permit office, where Tina actually works. And yeah, we have the little mice memos, which are very cute, but eat each other, basically, so.
Yeah, it seems kind of inefficient. Kind of reminds me of, like, how the ministry used to use the owls, but the mess was terrible, so they had to switch. Like, when is Makusa going to figure out that these mice are a bad idea?
They should just use the paper airplanes, isn't
right.
it? Yeah, that's basically what Ministry of Magic has.
Mm-hmm. I also like this tie-in with Tina working in the wand permit office when we just saw the headlines about wand permits. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I like that in this scene, Tina's like, well, you need a wand permit. And he's like, well, I applied for it weeks ago. Which
yeah, and I like the implication that, like, it's just like the real government. It's like, well, I applied for it, and then I never got it.
Yeah. But I like also because up until now, he's sort of portrayed as kind of goofy, uncoordinated, like, doesn't really seem to take what's going on around him all that seriously. But this kind of gives us a clue that he's not an unintelligent man.
Mm-hmm.
And he does things with purpose. He's not disorganized about it. Because he applied for his wand permit weeks ago. Like, he tried to follow all the rules. He just didn't know how crazy Americans are.
He tries to follow the rules, but then when they don't work,
he's like, well, whatever. Yeah.
Like, he's like, I tried.
Okay? But these rules are stupid, so I'm going to do it my way.
Like, he tries to obliviate Jacob. But then Jacob hits him and leaves, so it's like, okay.
Oh, well. Tried.
My bad.
I was, like, trying so desperately to read all of the signs in the background in this scene.
Oh, yeah.
Most of them are too blurry. Newspaper,
so I got here and I was like, no.
Most of them are really blurry, so you can't tell, but there is a sign kind of, like, behind Newt. And it says, all wand information will remain confidential. It's like the wizard's social security cards or something. Like,
yeah. I don't know. Kind of is, though.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're kind of like social security cards or like driver's license.
Yeah.
Because I bet kids don't have them, you know, because you wouldn't have a wand yet. But
right, right.
So, Newt says he was just in Equatorial Guinea. Any ideas what he was doing there?
It's like, just looking at some beasts and writing about them.
He says it was researching for his book, but we'll see.
Well, yes.
Maybe he was just trying to get a tan.
Maybe.
And here we get another little hint of America's feelings about beasts, because he's like, oh, I'm researching a book about beasts. And she's like an extermination guide? And he's like, no. what are you talking about? Which is kind of wild. Like, some of these beasts are just, like, magical dogs.
Right?
Americans are like, so we want to exterminate them? And it's like, no.
No, I really don't. But thank you.
I love how uncomfortable Newt looks in this scene. And, of course, after seeing that trailer and seeing what his bog art is, all I could think was like, oh my god, what does he think of that pile of paperwork all over Tina's desk right now? Like, this is his worst fears come to life.
That is accurate.
This is a good time to say my little theory about that flashback in part two. I feel like that's going to be the beginning of the movie. And then it's going to immediately cut to Newt at his desk job in the Ministry of Magic.
Yes.
Being really bored.
Yes.
And then he, like, gets a letter from Dumbledore or something, and he's like, oh, thank God. I'm leaving.
I'm going to Paris.
That's it. So then Abernathy comes in. And we only see Abernathy a couple times in this movie, but now we know he's going to be in the second movie, and he's going to be evil, I guess.
I guess.
I guess. I don't know.
Apparently.
Yeah. So he's like the head of the wand permit office, apparently. And he comes in to yell at Tina.
It always makes me giggle when he's like, where have you been? And she's like, what? I'm like, that's so me when I'm trying to get out of something.
What?
I'm sorry, I don't speak English. What did you say?
I don't understand the question.
I also love that he just, like, completely ignores Newt until he's like, where did she pick you up? But he just, like, steps right in front of him, and Newt's just kind of standing there like, Also, Abernathy, this time I watched it, I thought of the boss in the first Incredibles movie. You know, at the beginning. Bob's boss. He's really short.
I also like that you have to specify the first Incredibles movie, because there's two now.
I know, right?
Isn't that so cool?
That's amazing. but yeah, Abernathy is just kind of a silly, unimportant character in this movie. But
And we were talking last time, it was like, why did you bring him back? Of everyone, this guy didn't need to come back.
I don't think anyone was like, oh, I love Abernathy. What an interesting character.
There's a whole storyline that didn't need to be there that could come back, and I would be thrilled about it because it would make everything make more sense.
Yeah.
But Abernathy is not on my top 10 list of priorities, to be honest.
I don't know. Maybe he'll be really important. Like,
maybe.
We'll see.
He's just going to show up and be like, Tina, there are all these illegal wand permits, but you were out there following the second Salemers, and I had to do all this paperwork by myself. That's it. His worst fear is also paperwork. So then Graves comes in, because we got that little empathetic shot of him, so he's going to be like, okay, Tina, what were you going to show us? And she's like, yes, finally, my time to shine. And so they take his case and open it, and there's pastries inside. But not our pastries, like actual pastries.
Did anyone else notice how Abernathy addresses Graves?
Yeah.
Like, it's so, like, military. I don't know.
I did notice that this time. I was like, oh, he's really like, oh, Graves.
Yeah, he's like,
he's got the Graves, Mr. Graves thirst.
Sir! It's like, you could add a little salute in there and it'd fit. It's like, I don't know. Is this, like, foreshadowing? Like, was he already a follower at this point? Did he know this was Grindelwald? Did he just think Graves was pretty cool? Like, I don't know.
He's in love with
him. Maybe.
Is it gay?
That's always the question I'm asking.
That's the other slogan of our podcast.
It probably isn't.
He was afraid of ladies' things.
Could be.
Oh, well, that's true. He is afraid of lady things.
Yeah.
Well.
I would just like to shout out Eddie's acting in this whole sequence, because he doesn't say anything. He doesn't really even do anything. But when they take his case, he just looks so, like, outraged, but, like, sad, too.
Like, he can't do anything about it.
Yeah, it's like he's upset and there's vulnerability, and then when he sees what is slash isn't in it, his facial acting where he, like, recognizes it and then looks afraid, but then kind of schools his expression for the sake of everybody else. Like, he does all that just with his face. Yeah. Just with his face. It's amazing. Acting is so cool.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Well, and this is another kind of parallel at this point. You know, they take his case and he doesn't fight back, but later they take his case and he's like screaming.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different scenario because right now it's just like, I mean, it's still kind of like his beasts are going to get taken away, but later it's like, yeah, we're probably going to kill him.
Right.
And you.
Couldn't he have also just, like, ticked it over to Muggleworthy at that point? Or maybe it wouldn't work because they're not Muggles.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know.
So then we go to Jacob, who has just gotten home, and he looks up at a picture of his grandma, and he says, "I'm sorry, Grandma." And you're like, oh. And as we know, this was where there was originally a deleted scene where Jacob had a fiance who broke up with him because he didn't get the money for the bakery, and it was a stupid plot, and I think we're glad that it was cut out.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Grandma, is enough for me to be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I love you. Like, I don't need any more than that.
And then, the case, of course, opens, and it's not his case. And the Mertlap jumps out and attacks him, and then we get Dougal jumps out, but he's invisible. So the camera, like, follows him, quote unquote, up to the ceiling. He, like, launches himself out, and he breaks the ceiling. And then as he's jumping towards the window, you kind of see him, which I had never really noticed that before. Because it happens really fast, and he crashes through the window and leaves, and then the billywig zooms out after him.
Ah, the billywig.
I know. And then Grandma's picture falls, revealing the hole in the wall where the Niffler's gonna hide later, and then the entire wall crashes down, and you hear a roar. So that's the Arumpet. It apparently jumps out, like, a third-story window.
Oh.
Just crashes through the wall. So it's kind of interesting that these are the only ones that escape. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, of everybody in there, there's just, like, this handful that are like, ooh, well, I'm gonna leave.
And we know an Alchemy escapes, but Newt miscounts.
But a lot of other guys seem pretty content to be like, no, we'll stay in this case. Thanks, though.
The Mertlap just had a taste for blood. And Dougal was just bored, I think.
Well, at this point, maybe he was going after the Alchemy? I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe the Alchemy slithered out, and Dougal was like, oh, gotta stop that.
He's like, that's me. I gotta get that.
See, Dougal's just trying to help.
Everyone's just doing their best.
Yeah. And so then we go to the second Salemers, and Modesty is playing hopscotch and singing the creepiest song ever.
Yeah.
Who wants to read it? Anyone want to read out some lines?
Well, I sort of latched on to the my mommy, your mommy, which is gonna die.
It's and I was like, pleasant.
How is a child allowed to sing this song? And then I remembered Ring Around the Rosie is about the bubonic plague, so I guess things happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of creepy nursery rhymes. This is very creepy, though. And so she's singing that. And this is definitely part of the whole red herring thing where it's trying to be like, look, modesty is important.
Uh-huh. I think she's going to have to come back, though.
Yeah, I think
she's
so, too.
She's gotta.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, she wasn't as important to this movie as they were trying to make you think, but...
I still think there's something about her, though.
Yeah. Well, and she just disappeared, like...
Yeah.
She's got to come back. There's just a child wandering around. And obviously, Credence cares about her, so...
Right.
Then we get a bunch of close-ups of pamphlets, and the banner with the broken wand.
So I thought the broken wand banner is kind of interesting. It kind of begs the question, I mean, how much does Mary Lou know about magic and how? Mm-hmm. She obviously knows that magic is channeled through wands. She knows snapping them is a way to stop it.
I would like to know what her deal is.
Yeah.
Is she like a Petunia who's like jealous that she's not magic? Or is she like a typical like Salem witch hunter but in the 1920s?
I think she's more like that. I think she's like the mom from Carrie.
I feel like she knows something though. Like there's something, I don't know.
She's weird.
Well,
she's creepy.
She took credence from magical people.
Right.
Yes. And we're sort of unsure as to whether she knew he was magical or not.
Yeah.
Or she was, like, trying to stamp it out of him on purpose, or...
This is all stuff we're never gonna learn.
I know. If only this were a book!
Crazy.
But, the pile of pamphlets on the table, I pulled a Shannon and I paused my screen to write them all down.
Nice.
You've got The Witches Live Among Us, Heed My Words, with a picture of Mary Lou, and Join the New Salemers Army.
Yay!
Totally want to join that.
Say no
to
that.
Yeah, I think I'm good, but I appreciate the offer.
I will say no to this. Am I right?
Oh.
We get another high angle here of credence. While he's clapping that bird away, and a low angle of the bird, so the bird is in a position of power. I want to go into that.
Well,
more.
Okay, that's kind of interesting that you say that, because I decided to read into this unnecessarily, just because it seemed like a really random thing for me. Like, he's clapping away a bird. That's the first time we see credence. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was kind
of
weird.
You go ahead, and then I'll.
So, the bird is like a dove or a pigeon, and pigeons represent love, because they're kind of a type of dove, and doves have been a symbol of love and peace since before yins were born, and pigeons also represent sacrifice and dedication to loved ones, so it's interesting that he's chasing that away, first of all, and it's also interesting that is in a position of power over him.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's also, I mean, just literally chasing away a beast.
Right.
It's just kind of more of those little hints of animals that are throughout the movie. Even muggle animals.
Yeah, and I'm fully aware that I could just be like people are listening to this, probably like, it's not that deep. Which is fine, but I just thought it was kind of interesting.
I think everything's that deep, you know? I wish people analyzed my stuff as much as we analyze Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Let's start a podcast about my shows.
Okay.
Okay, so this is not a podcast about me.
I think it is.
Anyway. No, yeah, I mean, it's a really weird moment. And definitely part of it is, like, adding to the creepy aesthetic of the scene. And you're like, yeah. Well, what's going on? And I mean, it's an extremely high angle of Credence, so it's very, like, he's in a low position. And just Credence in this whole scene, like, while Mary Lou's giving the kids food and he's giving them food, he just looks worried. He just looks worried the whole time. When the one kid is asking, oh, is it a witch's mark? Credence looks like, oh my god, he's gonna die. We're all gonna die.
I don't understand her delivery of that line when she says, no, we're okay. Because it kind of sounds like she's, like, telling somebody, no, no, you don't have cancer, and then leaning over to the person next to her and being like, he'll be dead tomorrow. Like, yeah. It kind of feels like she's just not telling the whole truth, but
yeah,
I don't understand why that would be.
But where do all these kids come from? That's why I'm like, I don't know.
I assume they're all, like, the homeless youth of New York.
Gotta be.
It's like Oliver.
And so that's why they come get food. This is the only place they can reliably get food, but also they're being indoctrinated into a cult, so a little awkward. But.
Right. And she won't let them eat until they take a pamphlet. Ugh.
And the first time I watched it, I thought that they are handing out pamphlets, like it's now going to be their job to hand out pamphlets, which I think is probably a thing. But then I realized this time, like, I can't remember the other sister's name because she's not important, but she's really only handing them one pamphlet
Mercury.
Each. Yeah, that sounds right. Jupiter hands them one pamphlet each. So it's really about, like,
chastity.
Getting these kids to believe this stuff so that they can become the next round of Second Salemers. Well, and maybe this is kind of how Mary Lou got into it, you know?
True.
Maybe she was just a kid on the street, and the Second Salemers kind of brought her in. It's a cycle.
True, oh my gosh. True.
So then we go to Tina and Newt, and they're walking. And I realized this time I was like, where are they going? Because they end up at Jacob's apartment, but they don't know where Jacob lives, like... They're just walking. And I'm like, are they looking for clues? Are they doing anything?
Well, he's, like, surreptitiously trying to figure out where his case is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is she looking for Jacob so they can obliviate him?
Yeah, I assume so. But they just kind of seem like they're on a leisurely stroll.
Just let's go for a walk and kind of think things over.
Aww. So Tina reveals that she's supposed to stay away from the Second Salemers. She doesn't really go into it more. And then the Billywig flies by, and Tina's like, what was that? And Newt's like, it's a moth, I think. A big moth.
First of all, moths are nocturnal.
And then later, Tina does notice the Billywig again when she's in the crowd. And it's a high angle. The Billywig is in the position of power.
I accept.
She stares at the Billywig. She sees it. We all see this Billywig, and we know that it escaped this case, and nobody cares.
And it never goes home. Poor Billywig.
I guess it's just an insect.
Fantastic Beasts 2 3/4. The Billywig takes Manhattan.
Fantastic Billywigs and where to find them.
And this is how invasive species happen.
Yeah, that's true. That's where stink bugs came from. So,
yep.
Also, this scene where they're walking down the street, it's funny because the whole scene has been sort of grayscaled, so everybody looks really drab and muted, except for Newt and Tina. And you could tell they've put kind of a blue filter on to bring out their coats, so they stand out. But it's funny because there's a guy who walks by who is wearing blue pants, and his pants stand out a lot. I think I have, like, a version that, like, shows too much of the screen on the edges.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But, yes, but I thought that was funny. It's the things we need to pay attention to here are Tina and Newt and man in blue pants.
Well, and the bailiwick is blue.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of blue. The bailiwick is representative of Newt and Tina's love. Because it was there on their first date as they walked through Manhattan. And it's symbolic. It'll come back in the last movie when they get married. The bailiwick will be the best man.
It'll be like one of those really cliche movies where the last shot like zooms out really, really far from the church, and then the bailiwick flies by and he's like got like some fireworks, you know, like a
and
Disney
it says
movie.
The end.
Yeah. And then they lived happily ever after.
Oh my god. I would love that.
Yeah, me too.
So this is more of Newt really just like using magic at every opportunity. Because he obliviates, well, he doesn't obliviate, but he, like, casts a spell on the entire crowd as he walks through. And then he just goes inside. And then he just puts a building back together. He's just like, whatever,
so
who cares
casual.
If the muggles see this
so
from
good.
Outside.
He's not very subtle.
Not at all.
We have a note here about Tina jumping.
Yeah, that's totally me whenever I go somewhere crowded. Trying to find my friends.
Jumping.
I think I need to be friends with some more tall people.
Yeah.
Because when they're, like, my height and shorter, like, it's a lost cause for all of us.
I would agree, but I have some tall friends who like to go to concerts and stand in the crowd, and I'm like, you guys, I can't see anything. I'm, like, a head below everyone. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. My family's all tall, but... Our method through getting through crowds is usually that, like, at least two of us are wearing backpacks, so we all just hold on to a backpack.
Oh, yeah.
We just snake.
Conga line.
Yeah. So Newt checks on Jacob. He looks so unaffected. He's just checking that wound and is just like, okay, oh, gonna put this building back together. I don't want Tina to see. Like, he doesn't even immediately start treating Jacob in any way. He's just like, back to my case.
I thought it was kind of a clinical thing. Like, okay, yeah. This is a Mertlap bite. Doesn't look bad. I think we're okay. I don't know. That's how I read it, because I like
him. He's very
him.
Like, seen this plenty of times.
Yeah.
Nothing to see here.
Right.
Yep. No. He's ridiculous, and I love him.
And I was wondering, too, like we said, he just puts this entire wall back together.
Yeah.
Like, the whole fire escape just reattaches itself to the building.
Yeah.
Obviously, people can see this. Are, like, all English people this unconcerned with muggles seeing magic, or is it
just new? Well, I mean, you go back to the whole bank, like, yeah, he tries to obliviate Jacob, but he doesn't care about the banker that he... Petrificus Totalis, or all of the security guards who saw him apparate with Jacob. He's like, whatever. The Congress will figure that one out.
I love that.
Not my problem.
So then, after he's completely put the room back together and we're following Tina walking into the room, and he's like, well, he's not opening the case. I wrote opening, but he's snapping it closed. We see Grandma's picture move slightly, so it's just another little hint that the Niffler is hiding. The Niffler is there.
That's so cute.
I never noticed that before. There's even a little, like, squeak sound. It just goes, and then this shot immediately cuts.
I love this where Tina's, like, running over to check on Jacob, and I just love how she says this. It's like, his neck's bleeding.
Yeah.
It, like, reads as, like, you idiot. Like, what were you doing? Why didn't you check out this?
Yeah. Like, she's concerned in a, still not in a conventional way. It's concernedly, like, you let a beast get out and bite this muggle, and now I'm gonna have a lot more paperwork.
Yeah. She's not like, I hope this man's okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Muggles,
Yeah. I like when the Mertlap pops out from wherever and Newt grabs it and shoves it back in the case. Tina says, "Mercy Lewis, what is that?" And I think we've probably mentioned this on an episode, but it's been a while. So Mercy Lewis was an accuser during the Salem witch trials. She would, like, accuse people of being witches. and she makes an appearance in the Crucible, and she's not a very attractive character. So it's funny that she's used as, like, an expletive.
Yeah. Well, and she said earlier, what in the name of Deliverance Dane, who is someone who was accused of witchcraft. That was in the first 15 minutes.
Okay. So, mm-hmm.
I wonder if Mercy Lewis accused Deliverance Dane. Something I thought was really funny here is just how confused Newt is. So he's about to obliviate Jacob, and then she's like, no. And he's like, but you just were yelling at me about doing that. And she's like, no, he's a witless now, and he's injured. You have to fix him. And then he's like, all right, I'll keep him if you want. And she's like, you can't keep him. And he's like, what do you want me to do? And I'm like, me too. That's me when people don't tell me what to do. I'm just like, then I don't know, man.
I just think it's interesting how she says, we don't keep them.
Yes.
Like, it's very, like, objectifying.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. And not great.
Yeah.
Tina, also, I just want to say that I love that in this adult Harry Potter film, we're allowed to say things like flames out of his anus.
Yeah.
I think this is a great improvement.
Yep.
That's all.
It's the little things. So then Newt very reluctantly goes with, and they apparate. And then we see a little montage of all the beasts. We see the Niffler is the, like, so the picture falls and we see the Niffler. We get a kind of extended sequence of Dougal running through the streets, going in and out of invisibility, and he steals a kid's lollipop.
Which is pretty rude.
Yeah. I know. He steals, like, an apple from a cart or something. He's just kind of...
It just, every time, just reminds me of Prisoner of Azkaban. Harry under that invisibility cloak stealing that lollipop.
And
that actually is probably what that's intended to be.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would guess so.
It's a little nod.
I love it.
They're like, ooh, invisibility? We gotta steal a lollipop. Oh, man.
First thing you do when you're invisible, steal candy.
Yeah, yeah. From children.
Yes.
Of course.
Something else I kind of picked up on in this part is there are a lot of barking dogs, which makes sense. Like, a dog barks at, you know, this invisible creature. I think there was another barking dog earlier, and then the dog barking at the Niffler in the bank. More, like, little animal things. And then the last thing we see is an outer shot of the attic of the department store. And we kind of see through the window the alchemy growing into the space. But you can't totally tell what it is yet.
Doesn't look very comfortable.
No, but I think the alchemy is happy.
Okay.
It must be that there's a lot of cockroaches up there, you know? Mm.
Yeah.
And probably. It's just, like, yum.
1920s New York. So.
And Dougal is looking for it, but taking his time. So then we go to the newsroom, and Langdon Shaw is leading the Bare Bones in to see his father, the head of the newspaper.
I really love how, like, how much of a 1920s newsroom this is. Like, there's less smoking than I would think.
Well,
maybe,
yeah,
less shouting. But other than that, it feels very, like, His Girl Friday.
I actually thought about the smoking, too, when we go into Henry Shaw Sr.'s office. I was like, okay, neither of them have a cigarette in their hand, but the way they're sitting, I feel like they should.
Yeah, it's the 20s.
Yeah, definitely.
Everybody was smoking.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
And that's why they all died.
Right, because they didn't know it was bad for you.
Yeah. Langdon is so much fun. And I thought this the first time I watched the movie, but he really is. He's just having a jaunty old time sauntering through the newsroom. He picks up a baseball bat, and he's just like, ah, yes, the news, putting the papers to bed, as they say.
Who says that? Who says that? Tell me.
A 1920s news guy.
Or just what Langdon a weird Shaw. Thing. He's so excited.
Oh, Langdon.
He's just like, ah, yes, I brought some new friends to meet my father. They also believe in magic. This couldn't possibly go wrong. And you're like, oh, you.
Oh,
I
you.
I would like Langdon to come back as a villain. Forget Abernathy.
I just think it's so funny. Just the way they look at him, they're like, oh, God, you again.
Yeah, like, really.
What is it now?
They're like, who let him into the building?
He seriously has to come back and do something, because otherwise there was no point to the storyline at all.
Yeah.
No point whatsoever. Like, I thought this was going to be such a big, like, interesting tie-in.
Well, because you could do, like, you could have done the bare bones visiting the newspaper and the senator calling them freaks without Langdon.
Yeah.
So that's why it's like...
And doesn't he show up again, like, at the end of the film?
Yeah, he's, like
outside the bubble thing.
Crowd.
So, like, he's, like, there. Like, I feel like he's, like, an Abernathy type thing where we're like, oh, this guy's not important. And then he just shows up.
He is not sad that his brother is brutally murdered.
No.
And that's why I'm like, he should come back as a legit villain.
His brother is like, kind of a...
I mean, yeah, his
crap
sucks, but... he kind of looks almost happy when his brother dies. And you're like,
well,
okay. I mean, I guess
if your brother was that mean, I don't know.
I would love, like, a big villain who's a muggle. Like, I don't know how that would work, but...
Actual Hitler?
Because they'd just be like, okay, bye. Yeah, I would love Hitler. I wouldn't. That would be horrifying. I see we have a note here about a newspaper.
A newspaper? What's this? No, the newspaper on the desk. There's a couple headlines. The ones we can really see is something about a roof collapse. Christmas shopping already topping last year's figures. So again, that's setting the date and the time of year for this film.
Do we think the roof collapse is the Obscurus?
I think so.
Yeah.
The roof collapse that we saw at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
So then something I thought was interesting was when he introduced the bare bones, he introduced them as from the New Salem Preservation Society. So apparently that's, like, their official name.
Huh.
Which sounds better than the Second Salemers. But definitely I think, like, the, like, posters outside of their house... firehouse thing say Second Salemers on them, so they still refer to themselves as that, but I guess officially they're the New Salem Preservation Society.
So I know some of the pamphlets said
yeah.
New Salem or New Salemers.
Well then what the heck?
They're trying too hard to preserve Salem.
Yeah, basically.
Like, no, let's preserve Salem, but not that way. Langdon refers to crazy disturbances in the subway, which I guess is the Obscurus, or maybe that's the underground Wizard Broadway, I don't know. but I just thought it was interesting that it's specifically in the subway.
Subway, eat fresh.
Because we don't get down into the subway until later in the movie, but I guess this is kind of foreshadowing.
True.
And then this is also the part where he says that line from the trailer where we were all like, who's saying that line?
People behind this are not like you and me. This is witchcraft.
Yeah.
Which, like, you are correct.
Yeah.
It is.
Like, he sounds kind of crazy, but you're like, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. It's like when Harry's like, it's Draco Malfoy. And everyone's like, you crazy. And it's true. It is Draco Malfoy.
Yeah. It's like, oh no, he's right. Or even in the first book, he's like, it's Snape, and it's like, well, it wasn't, but like, it kind of is.
It was sort of Snape.
Yeah, like
you got pretty close considering you're 11 and you just got here.
Yeah. So then Henry Jr. calls them freaks. We get this long zoom in on Modesty, just looking like she is about to cut him. And then she gets
once again, trying to mislead us.
Yes, which is kind of weird because, like, you get this really intense close-up on Modesty, but then this little scene, it ends with Credence. Like, it always goes back to Credence.
Yeah.
Because then it's Credence drops the pamphlet, and Henry Jr. picks it up and calls him a freak again.
Says, you little freak, throw that in the trash where you all belong.
Yeah, I'm like, geez.
But, like, he's not...
Henry Jr. needs a Tumblr. Can call people trash.
He's not just being told by one person or one segment of society that he's a freak. It's, yeah, like, literally everybody he comes across. Which makes me think about the second movie, and, like, I don't know how he's going to be convinced to use his powers for good if he's been mistreated by literally everybody.
Well, I mean, this is a setup for, like, I mean, we don't know how conscious he is of the Obscurus, I guess, but, like, the next person he attacks is Henry Jr., and he kills him. So it's like, I don't necessarily think he was like, okay, now I'm gonna go kill him, but I think he got really angry about this, and then, like, the Obscurus came out.
Yeah.
And just kind of reacted. Yeah, for sure. But he goes after him specifically.
Yep. I just really hope this storyline ends up having a point.
Yeah. Maybe the point was just politics and journalism are bad, and we should kill them.
I don't know if that works for me.
No. Politics and journalism don't have to be bad, but...
Sometimes they are.
Yeah.
I think that this scene is a really good way to show, well, I mean, not just the scene, but the whole storyline with them. I think it's a good way to show, like, I mean, it led us down the path of thinking that this thing was Modesty.
It's true.
So it's kind of interesting, like, obviously, once you've seen it and you know the ending, like, watching and seeing Credence in this scene and that it's really him and he's taking it out on Shaw. I think it's a good way to show that. I would like there to be more to it.
I just feel like there's too much to it
for it to be just this throwaway thing. There's too much focus on the Shaw family.
Yeah,
right. For me to think that they're not coming back in any way.
Yeah,
right. But I don't know.
It's hard because it's one part of five, so I don't know. Yeah. I just don't know.
So then the last little bit is we get to Tina's apartment, and she is sneaking the boys in, and she's like, I'm not allowed to have men. And Newt's like, well, then we'll just leave. He keeps trying to leave, and it's really funny. Because even before this, he's like, well, I don't need to come. And she's like, yes, you do. And now he's like, I'll just take Jacob away. And she's like, no, you won't. And then we hear Mrs. Esposito being like, Tila, are you alone? And she's like, I'm always alone, Mrs. Esposito. And I want more Mrs. Esposito because she sounds funny.
That's also the kind of, like, clever script writing that I'm here for.
Oh, yeah, I'm always alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're like, oh.
Love it.
Tina.
It's so sad.
Yeah. When you can hear it in her voice, she's like, always alone, Mrs. Esposito.
But it's like, it's such an innocent reply to her, like, question, and it doesn't feel forced, but it still, like, gives you this interesting glimpse into her personality. Just, it's all the good stuff. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we get into the apartment and we get our first glimpse of Queenie, the light of our life, the most beautiful person in the movie.
Most precious snowflake cinnamon roll.
I love this scene. Like, oh my gosh.
It's so good.
I love how she gets dressed. It's so like.
She's so delicate. Know,
it's not like she's, it's so funny because it's not like she's putting on a show, but it's like just for her. Like, just, you know. Like, oh, it just feels really good to get dressed this way and, like, super dramatic.
That's true.
And, I don't know. It's so funny. I love it.
She's not, like, being sexy. She's just like, oh, I'm going to put on my dress with magic.
And I guess, I don't know. I feel like I don't want to get too far into this scene because I think we're going to talk about it next episode. But I think it says interesting things about her and about the culture that she lives in, that Jacob thinking, like, probably somewhat inappropriate thoughts about her doesn't seem to bother her very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is so interesting, like, to be able to hear what people are thinking about you.
Yeah. I mean, his thoughts
not
must
hear
be...
hear what they're thinking, but no.
His like, thoughts must be a lot more, like, endearing comparatively to what she normally gets.
Yeah, because she's yeah. pretty much immediately like, aww.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's probably just like, she's pretty. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. So that's the 15 minutes. We did it! I think that was a pretty decent
it.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That didn't take us that long.
I mean, it wasn't quite as... in depth as the expertise of Michael Harley, but
no.
I think that's okay.
Although
we tried.
So I was with my family last weekend and I mentioned something about like, yeah, so they did like, they were doing like the movie 15 minutes at a time and the first one was like 3 hours and they were like, 3 hours? And my mom and my sister were like, we always know when you're on an episode because it's not 3 hours long. You keep it short. And I was like, well, that's my superpower.
Short and to the point.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. So, for this episode's podcast question, we would like to hear your theories about the Shaws and whether or not they'll return to us and why they were there, basically.
Help us out.
Help.
Help,
we would love
please.
To hear from you. Yes.
If you're a video game developer, please help.
The theme of this episode is
help.
Help. We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. You can also leave us a review on iTunes. We love to hear your thoughts and your feedback, so don't be shy.
And we'll get the Nargles out of our Gmail so
yes.
you can continue to email us.
Yes. We're going to bring in Luna Lovegood and Rolf Scamander to take care of that.
The experts.
Yeah. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, Facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, and SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com, and support the show on Patreon at Patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. If you support at a high enough level, then you get to be added to our Speak Beastie Common Room, which is a pretty cool place to hang out. There's a lot of stuff about the trailers in there.
We just nerd out all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, people comment stuff and we're like, oh man, we didn't think of that. Time to add that to the notes.
Yep.
It's like we don't even do our jobs anymore.
No, you guys do it for us.
Yes, and thank you for that.
You're all happy about being able to comment on the website. Really, you know, that was just a shortcut for us.
Yeah.
I need your knowledge, because you're all very intelligent.
We're just here to be
creatures.
Pretty voices.
Well, that's a struggle sometimes.
Yeah.
I am Megan.
I'm Amy.
I'm Shannon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Speak Beastie. Case closed.